Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll get to ask D-Mays in 30 minutes. We'll get those questions in for D-Mays. We'll take your calls and your texts. We'll catch up with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet in 1 hour. But joining us now is Robbie Stanley. You can hear him on Robbie and Rex Road every single morning on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game from 6 to 9 a.m. Robbie, Predators, Canucks, and it is locked in that you and Joe will have very little sleep, at least on Sunday and Tuesday. Overall impressions of this matchup and how the Predators kind of match up with the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, first off, I was ungodly excited about the start times at home, so at least we'll get some sleep when that comes about.
4 p.m. Love that.
I know. Big fan of it. Look, I think this is a really interesting matchup, and I think it's going to be a challenge for the Predators. You know, you look at Vancouver, they're very deep down the middle, and that's going to be an area where I think the Predators are going to be hard-pressed to match up against JT Miller and Elias Pettersson and you know, they're just Elias Lindholm. They got a lot of really good players up the middle. But I really like the way the Predators play down the stretch. I really like the underlying numbers that I'm seeing about the chances you're generating, how much you have the puck. You know, UC Saros has played a lot better. There's a lot about the way the Predators play down the stretch that I think should be encouraging if you're a Predators fan. And look, I said it this morning, I've got the Preds winning this series in 7 games. Ooh. I think it's a toss-up. I think it's going to be a series that comes right down to the very end, but I think the Predators certainly are capable of winning it.
I'm with you, Robbie. I don't think it's going to be D-Bay said Preds in 5.
Yeah, I got Preds in 5.
And I love his optimism. Yeah. I know it's spicy, but I'm with you. I'm going to take a very tightly contested 7-game series. I do think the Predators end up winning it, but in your opinion, what's the difference for the Predators?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I like the way that Saros is trending right now. For the most part, I think he's been really good in the second half of the season. And number two, like, Vancouver's been great all year, and they're super talented. But I do wonder this time of year, when all of the little things turn into really big things, the Predators just flat out have more guys who have been there and done that before. Like, Ryan O'Reilly is a playoff MVP. He won a Conn Smythe and a Stanley Cup. They got a 2-time winner in Ryan McDonough, a 2-time winner in Luke Shen. Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi have made deep runs. They got a lot of guys who've been there and done this before. And look, that's not everything. Like, you know, I think sometimes we make a little bit too much of playoff experience, but it is something. Like, I think there's a lot of pressure on Vancouver, and particularly early in the series. Like, if the Predators come out in game one and they make a statement and they win that game, the noise is going to get loud in Vancouver. I've seen these series before with Canadian markets. It gets loud very quickly. And I always wonder how, like, younger teams and teams that aren't that experienced in dealing with stuff like this, how do they handle it? So I like the Predators' matchup advantage from that perspective. And there's something about this Predators team with kind of the moxie that they have down the stretch here. And I think you can trace a lot of that back to guys like McDonough and O'Reilly that I really like and I think really suits them well this time of year. So those are a couple of the reasons why I like the Predators' chances in this series.
Robbie Stanley is with us. Robbie, I'm with you with the experience side of things. It's not everything, but it is something. You know, not getting too high, not getting too low, just being on that stage in the past and knowing what it takes to get through the, you know, the just how tough especially the first round is and to get through the slog of a 7-game series. But if we're going to talk about experience, I think that we would be remiss to not mention how UC Saros doesn't have the most experience in the playoffs. So what about the UC Saros side of things? That the small amount of playoff experience that he does have, it hasn't been, you know, the best resume in the postseason.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out a lot. And I think not only for this series, like I think you're going to start to, like as Barry Trotz continues to piece together what the plan is at goalie long term, like to me, this is a really important piece of it, right? Like if Saros comes out and he plays great and the Predators go on like a run to the conference final, well, I would assume that probably factors pretty heavily into your decision as to whether or not to extend him to a long-term contract. You know, if they come out and they get blitzed by Vancouver in the first round, they're out in five games, and Saros doesn't play well, then I think the conversation of what you do in goal moving forward becomes pretty loud again. So I think it's big for the future of the position. And look, I think we all know that UC Saros is a great goaltender. But the fact of the matter is he's had the bubble series against Arizona, which was weird, and they played terrible in that series, and I thought he was average to below average. They had the Carolina series where they were totally outgunned by Carolina. He played great in that series, and they gave him a run. And then a couple years ago, he didn't play. I mean, he was hurt against Colorado, and we know what happened in that series. So there's not a ton to point to UC Saros. On the other side of things with Thatcher Demko, I think he's got like four career playoff games. So there's not a ton of playoff experience in goal in this series, but I think this is massive for Saros in terms of where his career goes from here. They're not going to base the entire decision off the outcome of this series, but I do think it's a pretty important piece of the puzzle when you're determining what to do from here if you're Barry Trotz.
Robbie, we'll talk with Robbie Stanley. I got the Predators, like Caroline said. I got the Predators in winning five. Y'all need to stop being scared. Just say it, man.
I love it.
Come on, just say five. But you did.
Why not four?
Why not four? I take the clean sweep. I got a broom ready at my house, so I'm ready to use it if necessary. But you talked about UC Saros and his play. Because of the – and this may be if they – you know, I believe they will continue to go – continue to advance in the playoffs, but this may ultimately be their longest, you know, trip back and forth, back and forth. With that being said, how do you think they factor Lincoln in into this whole mix? Do you think if this team comes out and win game one, then that gives, you know, Coach Bruno a better idea of how to use Lincoln in? If they come out and lose game one, do they stick with Saros a little bit longer? Because to me, this back and forth, say it goes six or seven, that's a lot of travel back and forth for both teams. And you have to have two goalies in situations like this.
Well, I think they're really confident in Kevin Lankinen. I think that he's proven time and time again this year that he can step in and do the job. D-Mace, I was really curious to see what the schedule looked like because there was so much talk about, like, could there be a back-to-back at some point in this series? And the answer is no. Like, they avoided that. So my guess, and I could be wrong about this, my guess is that Saros is going to get all of them. That's just my guess, that regardless of how long it goes, he'll get all of them. The travel is an interesting aspect, though, because, I mean, for the Predators – in the playoffs, you can't get farther away than Vancouver. Like, Vancouver is the furthest possible matchup that you could have. So if this thing gets to six or seven games, you're talking about a trip out there, a trip back, another trip out there, another trip back, and then potentially another trip out there after that. That is a lot of travel. That's a lot of time on an airplane. And we saw it in 2016. That can wear on you after a while. So, like, the travel is a big part of this. I think there are some Predators fans who are scared to death of it, just going back to 2016. Now, keep in mind, in 2016, they played seven games in California and then played another seven games back in California with San Jose. That's 14. That's a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, you could see where travel can weigh on you. So just because they're going to Vancouver doesn't mean that the series has to go seven games. It doesn't mean that the travel really has to wear them out. But I think it's going to be Saros in all of them. I do wonder how the travel affects the goaltending matchup, though, because – some of this in the playoffs, as we know, is just about endurance and the war of attrition. And that's a big part of kind of navigating the schedule here in the playoffs.
Now, is this series going to be predicated or based on how the frontline guys do, the top scorers, or is it more so the back end guys, the second, you know, second tier scoring? Is that what's going to put Nashville over the edge? Or is it, hey, listen, the Yossis, the Forsberg, they need to play, you know, lights out in order for this team to win? Or do they have a little leeway in that where they can play good hockey, but then those back end guys need to play, you know, as good or even better than the front line guys?
I think the front line guys are going to be what carries them. And look, if they're going to make a deep run, they have to get scoring from Tommy Novak. They have to get scoring from Luke Evangelista. And you've got to have goals kind of chipping in every now and then from your Michael McCarrans and your Cole Smiths and your, you know, Ryan McDonoughs of the world. Like, you've got to have some guys step up in big moments. But, like, if the Predators are going to win this series and if the Predators are going to make a deep playoff run, then it's going to have to be because Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist and Roman Josi carry them. Like, that's what it's going to have to be. And those guys did a great job of carrying them in the second half of the season. Now, you got some of both, right? Like, you had those guys playing at an extremely high level, and then you did get some timely goals from Novak and Evangelista and Sherwood and guys like that. So that's the perfect scenario where you're getting both, and that's kind of what they got over that 18-game stretch where they went 16-0-2. But to me, D-Mace, like, everybody makes a big deal about secondary scoring, and I get it. Like, I'm a believer in that too. But ultimately, you need your best players to perform at a high level when you need them the most. And if the Predators get that, I think they're going to win the series. If they don't get that, then they're probably going to be sitting at home after the first round.
Now, what is another area that if in order for the Nashville Predators to win this game, win this series, that they have to do well in? Another area where, you know, because you look at the teams and you look at it's sort of evenly matched in a sense. Is it just the experience that can potentially get Nashville over, or is it somewhere else within the game that you must see a clear-cut advantage for the Nashville Predators?
Well, I think it's a couple things. I do think, like, handling the highs and lows of a playoff series, because there will be both. I mean, they're going to lose some games in this series. They're going to win some games, I think, in this series, and how you manage that is a big deal. But I also think, you know, there are moments in a series, whether you get a 5-on-3 power play or you're down or you're up by a goal late in the third period and they pull the goalie. Like, what you do in big moments like that, I think ultimately is the difference. And I think everybody, like, if you're a Preds fan and you watch regular season hockey and then you translate it to the playoffs, a lot of people think the referees just kind of swallow their whistles and they let them play. And I do think for the most part there's fewer penalties that are called in the playoffs, but they're still going to call some penalties. And we've seen it before, like, the special teams is such a big part of this. And you don't necessarily, if you're the Predators, like, you don't have to have your power play humming along and clicking at 30%. But when you have an opportunity late in games on the power play to score a big goal, to put yourself up a goal, or to score a big goal to tie the game, like, you need your big players to come through in those moments. And sometimes, D-Mates, like, it's not about how many you score. Sometimes it's about when you score it. And I think that's a big deal for the Predators here. So I think winning or breaking even in the special teams battle is really key for the Predators. If they can at least break even there, then I like their chances 5-on-5 in this series. But you have to find a way to not let special teams become a huge advantage for Vancouver the other way.
Talking with Robbie Stanley, previewing the Predators and Canucks in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Robbie, you bring up Luke Evangelista, and Joe had a great breakdown in The Athletic, learning a little bit more about Luke Evangelista and his personality behind the scenes, which I think we're starting to get, you know, peel back the layers on that a little bit, you know, from the Winnipeg game, the go bad boy. Go, bad boy. And little pieces from Joe's article that were really fun. But I think the foundation of it is Luke Evangelista is becoming more and more a guy that the Predators can rely on. What kind of an X factor can he be in the playoffs?
I think a big one. And look, he's kind of a special kid. Like, I've been talking about him for a couple of years. And I remember last year I said that I think eventually he can grow into a point-per-game player in this league. And some people thought I was nuts. And then now I think you're kind of starting to see what I've seen in this kid for a while, which is he's got an elite hockey sense out there. Like, he can make some plays that just not a lot of people can make. And look, there's still plenty of room for him to grow physically. There's still a lot of maturing to his game that's going to need to take place. He's got to get quicker, all those things. But one of the most encouraging parts about this run that they've been on has been him. I think he's played great down the stretch. And look, the playoffs are a different animal. They're going to target him. I mean, they're going to try to push him around and really make life difficult for him. And it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to it with the physicality of the playoffs. But I really like where his game is at right now. You know, I know for some Predators fans, you look at the young guys and you're like, okay, well, this wasn't really the year for the young guys that we thought. Like, Cody Glass didn't play all that great. Tomasino and Parsonen aren't even up here anymore. They're in Milwaukee. I think you could feel really, really good about Evangelista and where his game is, and not only where it is, but where it's going. So they're going to need him in this series. Like, I mean, they're going to need some secondary scoring, as D-Mace pointed out there, and I think he's as equipped as anybody, along with Novak, to get that done for him.
Yeah, that's what we talked about that yesterday, how you're going to largely rely on the Forsbergs, the Yossis, the Nyquists, the O'Reillys, but you're going to need some help from some of these secondary scorers as well. One thing that we talked a lot about, I guess a couple of weeks ago, was Predators fans' anxiety about potentially peaking too soon. I look at the Canucks, and you could maybe make that argument about the Canucks as well. They came out of the gate swinging. They were hot in the first half of the season. And then in the second half of this season, they kind of trailed off. Is that truly the Canucks potentially peaking too soon? Or is that as simple as Thatcher Demko just wasn't available for, you know, a large part of the second half of the season?
I think Demko is a big part of it. Like, they still have so much firepower that I wouldn't worry too much about them if I were a Canucks fan. Just the same way, like, you know, people have made a big deal about the Predators. They went 16-0-2, and then I think their record in the last 10 was like 4-5-1 and something like that. I think people make way too much of a deal of those kind of things. I've seen teams that were terrible in their last 10 games heading into the playoffs go on to win the Stanley Cup, and I've seen teams that have gone 8-0-2 or 9-1-1 in their last 10 heading into the playoffs get beaten 5 games in the first round and they're done. So the playoffs really are kind of a reset for all of it. I think confidence is big. So I do think the Predators have a lot of confidence right now, which I think is good, and I think that translates over. But I think if you're a Vancouver fan, and some of the numbers have gone down, like Adam Bingen went through it this morning, they were a much better team in the first half of the season than they have been in the second half. And it's not just the goaltending. Like, their 5-on-5 scoring has gone down. So, I mean, if you want to, you could find some reasons to be really encouraged if you're the Predators, just based on kind of the way Vancouver has been trending. But I've seen this a lot in the playoffs, and people are doing it with Colorado right now too. Of, man, they don't look very good heading into the playoffs. This is a kind of a classic reset, and you never really know how the last 10 or 15 games of the regular season are going to translate into the playoffs. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't at all. And it's what makes this tournament so interesting, and why I think the Stanley Cup playoffs are the best thing in sports.
Now, Robbie, let's segue out of hockey because we're going to be talking hockey pretty much today and moving forward. You know, I think we're going to be talking about hockey for a while because I expect the Nashville Predators to, you know, do what they need to do to advance. But the NFL draft, we haven't I haven't spoken with you since all this draft stuff started to come up. Draft is next week, next Thursday, so we're less than a week away. But what do you think the most likely scenario is for the Tennessee Titans? Do you think they move out of that 7th pick, or do you think they take player of need?
I think the most likely scenario is they stick at 7 and they take a player of need. And the answer that I have of what I think is probably going to happen is pretty boring. Like, I think Joe Alt is probably going to be the guy, and he's probably going to be the pick there. The thing that's really intriguing to me, and D-Max, I think you and I may disagree a little bit on this. Like, if Malik Nabers and Joe Alt are there at the same time, what do you do? And my answer is Nabers. Like, I think Nabers has a chance to be special at the NFL level. I know the Titans have Ridley and they've got Hopkins, but I still think they need a young guy that can be a foundational player to build around. I know they need a left tackle. So, to me, it really comes down to Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan. Like, as you're doing your evaluations, who do you think is a better player? Do you think it's Malik Nabers? Do you think it's Joe Alt? And if you do think it's Malik Nabers, I think you should take it. But I think what ultimately is going to happen is going to be Joe Alt there at 7. They take Joe Alt, and they have their franchise left tackle. And then your hope is after that, you don't have to worry about it for the next 8 to 10 years, and he's your guy, and you've got a foundation over there of Alt and Skaronski that you build around moving forward.
Robbie, I was thinking about you last night when I saw the news that Andre Dillard is headed to Green Bay.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Well, thank God he's not starting, but now I I was hoping the Packers were going to draft like a corner in the first round, and now I'm like, please, for the love of God, draft Amarius Mims so we can get as many tackles as possible.
You already have one.
Andre Dillon.
Hey, y'all got one.
You got one.
You got a starting left tackle, man. Come on.
Oh, is that what he is? I thought he was a practice.
Well, he's a starter here.
He was a starter here. I mean, he. If they didn't, they. I said this to Caroline. They must didn't watch any tape from last year, the Green Bay Packers, because had they saw the tape, I don't think they would have signed him. That's just me.
I mean, maybe, look, he made, Arden Key look like an all-pro in camp last year, so maybe they're just trying to bolster the confidence of one of their edge rushers in training camp. But we're going to line you up against Andre Dillard every rep. And you're going to feel like you're Superman heading into the regular season. It was a ridiculous move.
Love will have zero confidence. Yeah, but the edge rushers, though, they are going to be feeling like they're on cloud nine. D-Mace and I talked about before the Titans acquired Calvin Ridley, like who is wide receiver two going to be? And I said, look, it's a Tennessee two, but it's like a Cincinnati four. Like your number two receiver would not be a two anywhere else. We'll call Andre Dillard a Tennessee tackle. He's a starting tackle in Tennessee, but not anywhere else.
Robbie? I'm not sure Andre Dillard could start for the University of Tennessee. Yes.
He may be right about that.
Robbie Stanley, host of Robbie and Reich's Road, 6 to 9 a.m. on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Rob, appreciate you stopping by. Get some sleep today and tomorrow because I know you're not going to get much of it over the next few days.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, y'all. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it. Robbie Stanley, he is the very best. All right, coming up next, let's get into Ask D-Mays. Get those questions in for D-Mays. We're talking draft. We're talking Titans. Any questions that
Bring
you
it.
Have, 615-737-1025 is the phone number, taking your calls and your texts. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and attend Tennessee bet to bet. And also, we've got some tickets to give away. We've got a pair of tickets to give away to the first Preds home playoff game, game 3 in the Canucks series, next Friday night. So stick around. We will be giving away a pair of tickets to that. Join Nashville Super Speedway and the City of Lebanon for Speedway on the Square tomorrow, April 20th, from 1 to 6 p.m. in downtown Lebanon. Stop by, bring the family for a day filled with inflatables, face painting, balloon art, live music, and a ticket giveaway to the Ally 400 NASCAR Cup Series race at 3:30 p.m.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards. And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
Fire. On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mays. Get those questions in for Derek Mason. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll take your calls. We'll take your texts. Plus, keep in mind, we do have a pair of tickets to give away to the first Preds home playoff game at Bridgestone Arena. So stick around for your cue to call in for your chance to win a pair of tickets to game 3 of Predators against the Canucks in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But D-Mays, let's get in some questions.
Let's do it.
For D-Mays. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texts in and says, one thing to think about, neighbors in an offense with 3-plus 1,000-yard receivers. How much was he doubled compared to Harrison, who had 1,300 yards, where the number two receiver was the tight end, who didn't even hit 600? Harrison was doubled the majority of the time. How much is that a factor for you in your evaluation, D-Mays?
The factor is how well did you beat the double team? How many times were you able to split the double team, or how many times you were able to find that hole in the zone? Because double teaming an individual doesn't mean you still can't get the football. Depending on what route combinations are there, actually you may end up still getting open. So did double teams frustrate you? Did it seem like it was getting to you during the game? You don't hold that against anyone, but you do see how do they figure it out. You know, if they're being double teamed throughout the game, how do they figure it out along with the offensive coordinator? Are you still in tune with the game even though you're being double covered? Because times, especially young wide receivers, when they're doubled, like pretty much all the they can tend to float because in their minds, I'm getting doubled, I'm not getting the ball, somebody else is getting open. So you may end up floating through, you know, some routes or whatnot. I want to see if he allowed that to happen or whoever was double allowed that to happen. And in this answer, it was Marvin Harrison Jr. So if I'm looking at it, how well did you beat the double coverage? Were you able to find the holes within the zone of you know, the double coverage? Because they're not bringing two guys down to, like, basically cover. What they do is underneath coverage and over the top coverage. They slice it. If you're running a shallow cross, they may, you know, the other guy, the other safety may, you know, cut down and take away that. How do you navigate when you know there's double coverage? Can you read the double coverage? That's a big component too, because if you are double covered, you can read it. You can find holes in the zone. So how well did you, you know, again, how well did you navigate through the double team?
And look, it's true. Yeah. Like, you can see it on paper that there were a lot more offensive weapons that defenses had to pay attention to at LSU than they did at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't just the two receivers in Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. It's also the quarterback that could escape anything. So, yes, that's true. The defenses were forced to spread out more against LSU. But I think beyond just the defenses and beyond just the numbers that you might see in a box score, just look at the tools. Mm-hmm. Look at the skills between Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. Not just the, okay, well, Marvin Harrison had X number of yards against double coverage versus Malik Nabers, who had X number of yards against single coverage. It's more so the speed. Look at the hands. Mm-hmm. Look at the ability to change directions. Look at the ability to run routes. Those things are all, I think, more part of the story as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a lot of factors involved when you're trying to, you know, evaluate these receivers because, you know, in today's football, everything is pass-centric. Mm-hmm. It's just like everything you do is pass-centric. So, you know, sometimes a guy putting up a lot of numbers is just a guy putting up a lot of numbers. That's just what it is. It's not that this guy is a dominant player. Mm-hmm. He's just benefiting from the rules and the way the game is played now. Whereas, you know, you look at a Harrison or a Nabers, let's just look at those two guys. Because I think there were times where where Roma Dunze did sort of disappear. But it wasn't like he disappeared because he wasn't in tune with the game. He disappeared because the defense so totally took him out.
Mm-hmm. Like against Texas.
Exactly, against Texas. But the good part about that for them is they had other pass catchers. Ohio State didn't have other pass catchers. Their second best receiver, he was hurt majority of the season. I don't think he played some, but he was hurt majority of the season.
Yeah.
So it was just Marvin Harrison Jr. And he still was able, especially against Michigan. Who else did they play? Alabama. What, did they play out? No, it was Michigan. Yeah. And it was like three other teams where his numbers were high.
To be fair, it was basically just Michigan.
Yeah, it was Michigan.
Because Missouri that's the game. In the bowl game. Yeah, played Missouri.
But I'm talking about over the last two seasons. He's had good games against Michigan. He has good games. Georgia. So he's been able to elevate his game even when he's the only pass catcher. I'm not saying that Nabers wasn't able to do that. But Nabers had a number two guy that can flat out play. Washington had a number two guy and a number three guy that could play. That took sort of the pressure off of Roman Dunze when if he wasn't a part, if they were taking him out the offense, you still can run your offense from a passing standpoint. Mm-hmm. It was hard for Ohio State when they tried to take her Harrison out, or when they took him out early. Their offense wasn't the same. Their offense fluttered a lot when he wasn't a part of it.
Especially when they didn't have a quarterback like Chase Stroud.
Absolutely.
Mark Texan says, so the Predators have a lot of days off. Do veterans, as opposed to younger guys, typically do better with more days off? Or is it more of a case-by-case basis?
I think it's a case-by-case basis. I think Because, okay, there's a difference. There's two differences in young guys. There's a young guy, first-year guy. Then there's a young guy that's like been in the league 3 or 4 years, but still haven't had any playoff experience. That's still a young guy. He's been in the league some years. He understands the league, but he's still young in regards to playoff hockey. Veteran guys, it helps a lot in regards to your rest. Because these guys understand that there's another gear that they need to kick into. Mm-hmm. And they use that in this situation, the Predators, this week. They've used this week to rejuvenate, to lock in, as my son says. Dad, I'm locked in right now. And he's usually studying or watching the Lakers when he says he's locked in.
The two most important things.
Exactly, two most important things. My mom and dad, but the Lakers and homework. Yes. So you know how to lock in as a veteran player. You know that the playoffs is something totally different than the regular season. Young guys would rest. They get a little antsy. They just they're hype, especially if it's this is their first playoff. They're hype. They're excited. They want to play now. And the older guys are like, just calm down. You know, that comes with experience. Just mm-hmm. calm down. It's coming. Don't rush it. The first game is coming. Just calm down. Locked in, use this time to rest mentally as well as physically. And veteran guys that have been through this understands that.
Eric is on the line with a question for D-Mace. Our guy, Eric. What's up, Eric? Appreciate you for calling in.
Hey, and I've got a dad joke first.
Go ahead.
You may or may not like this. So what did the surgeon say to the patient who wanted to close his own incision?
I do not know.
Suit yourself.
Oh. You've redeemed yourself from last week, Eric.
Yeah, last week, Eric. One. Yeah, you beat. Yeah, last week wasn't that good. You wasn't at the top of your game last week. You're back. You're back there.
Okay, D-Mace, I do have a question for you, but this is kind of related to this question. Did you hear about what happened to? I guess it was on the conference call. Trent Baalke, the GM of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Did you hear what happened?
I can't say that I did or have.
Well, he was on the conference call, and let's just say I heard a clip of it. He, in the middle of it, cut the cheese.
I did hear that.
Hey, when you got to cut the cheese, you got to cut the cheese, brother.
But my question kind of related to that is, were you ever involved in a situation where you were in a public forum or whatever it was and something embarrassing happened? Maybe not to that level, but just something embarrassing happened. That's why I'm kind of bringing it up. Guys, y'all take care and have a great weekend.
Thank you for your call, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. Gosh, embarrassing? Have I ever been involved? Embarrassing. And I don't think I have. I could have been. I mean, I don't think I have. I guess when your kids are little and, you know, I'm not going to say which one of my kids, but when you're with your kids and they, you know, cut the cheese and everybody's smelling it and you're like, what? Like, and then they tell you after the fact, yeah, I did it.
It was me.
It was me. So I guess something like that, but other than that, no, I haven't. I guess I don't embarrass easy. Now I embarrass my kids easy, but I don't get embarrassed easy, I don't think. Unless you're like talking about me in a sense of, you know, I remember when that I do get embarrassed sometimes when people come up to me and, you know, oh, we love you here and you just don't know how. It's gratifying. Uh-huh. It's humbling, but it also is embarrassing too, because it's like, I don't know what to say.
What
like,
do
thank
I do?
You. Like,
yeah.
What do I do? Like Will Ferrell, what do I do to my hands? You know, or Vrabel saying, "Mason, what are you doing with your hands, man?
Joe, what are you doing with your hands? Put your hands down."
That would live forever.
I do feel like in the age of social media, mm-hmm. if anything just slightly out of the ordinary or weird or awkward or embarrassing happens, boom, it's viral.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and then it lives forever. They're gonna always be able to go back to that clip and pull it back up. But no, I have not gotten embarrassed. I guess one thing that sort of was embarrassing a little bit. It was, but it wasn't. I guess it's more embarrassing now than it was then. The whole Bill Belichick, he and I back and forth. Now that I watch it, it's embarrassing because it's like, man, Dan, was I really like, I didn't even realize I did it at the time. I didn't realize that clip was out until like years later. And then you watch, it's like, oh man, ooh. Like, okay.
Sorry, Bill.
Yeah, sorry. I wasn't talking to you, but sorry.
All right, back into your questions for D-Maze coming up next. Also, we do have a pair of tickets to give away to the first Predators home playoff game, so stick around for your opportunity to win those. This week's Nashville's best deal is Prince's Hot Chicken, the original and iconic hot chicken joint. Get half off a $25 gift card right now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Gift card is only good for the Tanger outlets in Antioch and Inside Assembly Food Hall in downtown Nashville. Right back into your questions for D-May, 615-737-1025 is the phone number. And a reminder, we've got a pair of tickets to give away for the first home Preds playoff game, so stick around for your opportunity to win those. Right back into your phones, Greg's on the line with a question for D-May. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, D-May, let me ask you real quick. Was Les Stickle y'all's coordinator, passing game coordinator, when you were playing?
Yeah, Les.
The 99 season?
Les was the coordinator, yeah, the Super Bowl year. Yep, he was.
Well, I was going to say, if he would have been smart, he'd have had you on that slant. that slant to you, and you would have scored. I would give you props, D-Mace. Caroline, D-Mace was a baller back in the day. Five-yard seasons, you could do it. But I like Caroline's guy. I always kind of the banner for neighbors. Mm-hmm. I like him because one thing he did, I know at LSU, you heard the comparisons with Mr. Harrison, who's a great player, to Larry Fitzgerald. And Larry Fitzgerald was a Hall of Fame player. But I think in neighbors, you got a potentially a Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase type of player. If you got that combination and then you got the receivers they picked up, I mean, I think you struck gold there. Even if the tackle is there, I think you got to go for the playmaker. You can find a tackle. I know I'm just saying that, but you don't have to necessarily take him first. Like I said, we'll see what Mr. Harbaugh does. But y'all guys doing a great job. D-Mace, if they'd have got you in there, man, they would have won that Super Bowl. Because y'all would have went for two and they got the ball to you, or Steve would have run it in. Appreciate you guys.
Greg, appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I do appreciate that. But listen, Kevin Dyson was a hell of a player before his injury. And they made the right. It was the right call. He caught the ball. The defensive guy just read it well. Just read the play, and unfortunately, they end up winning the Super Bowl, and we didn't. So, had he not read it, there's no doubt in my mind that Kevin Dyson would have caught the ball and scored. But I appreciate all of the love. Neighbors, I don't think you can go wrong with either guy. I'm just more of a Harrison guy, Big Ten. I was there when his dad played, and to me, he's potentially a better version of his dad. Mm-hmm. And his dad was a hell of a player.
If you're guaranteed to get a better version of Marvin Harrison Sr.,
yeah,
I mean, you run to go take
exactly.
It.
So, but I'm just more partial to Harrison. Not that I don't like neighbors. Mm-hmm. I'm just more partial to Harrison.
And to his point about you can get a tackle in the second round, can you?
I'm not taking that chance. I understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
I get it. But I'm not taking that chance. If Alt's there, that's just me. If Alt's there, it's a hard decision. If neighbor's there, yeah, it is a hard decision. I'm taking Alt, or I'm moving out of that spot, getting some more draft picks, but I'm not moving too far down where I can still get my tackle.
Not to 28?
No, hell no, I'm not moving to 28. And Jared, I love you. But, again, you have selective hearing, man. I think the world has a – is there like a pill or something you can give people for selective hearing?
I'm sure there probably is.
You have too much selective hearing it's become a problem.
It might just be called a Q-tip.
Yeah, exactly. So you just give the person that, and then hopefully their hearing gets better over time. But yeah, Jarrett, you have selective hearing on that one.
Speaking of that, Cameron says, I've got another Willie D home run trade back scenario. Hour number seven for Mr. Irrelevant and another sixth rounder. But if that Mr. Irrelevant turns out to be Brock Purdy, that's not too bad of a deal.
I'll take it.
Not too bad of a deal. Kyle texts in with a question for D-Mace. Says, when going into the playoffs, do you change your mindset or keep what's worked for the majority of the season?
No, you don't. I mean, you don't. If you are a true competitor, there's no thought pattern. Like, there's no mindset that changes. You're on attack mode all the time. Ask Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan or LeBron or Tiger or, I mean, who else? I mean, throw out anybody else, like these great individuals,
Brady.
Ask them. It doesn't change. Like, they are on attack mode all the time. They are thinking of greatness all the time. Just because a playoff start doesn't mean, okay, now I got to shift to now I got to think. No. These guys that are these uber competitors, their mindset doesn't change. It's like my mindset is to win and to dominate. Now, how we go about it may be different in the playoffs, but there make no mistake. I want to be flawless during the season, and I want to be flawless during the playoffs. You know, what changes is win by all means necessary now. Now it's just win. If I don't have a good game, but we still win, great. We got to find a way to win. Find ways to win. Do the little things that are going to separate you from the next team. But as far as me and my mindset going into the playoff, it's the same. I'm on attack mode. I want to win. That should never change. That should always be, you know, at the front of your mind. Like, how do I dominate each game? How do I get better each game? It's not, okay, the playoffs start. Now I need to ramp. No. You ramp it up. It's hard to then ramp it up. You know what I'm saying? If you've been playing at a level of one, it's hard when the playoffs start to ramp it up to a level five. No, you got to always be at a level five in this sport. You have to.
Fair. Yeah. Fair. Matthew Nashville texts in, says, excluding the Titans, what are some teams under the most pressure to nail the draft next week?
Wow. I think the Giants have to. I think the Chargers need to, because they don't, I mean, look at their receiver room. They don't have, and they got a new coach. Mm-hmm. They need to hit on this year's draft. Not to say they need to go to the Super Bowl or, you know, be the best team in the NFL. No, they need to hit on their draft because they have holes to fill. They have a team to build the way he wants to build it, meaning Jim Harbaugh.
And they've got a lot of expiring contracts exactly. In that team
so
after this season.
I think it's critical for them. I think it's going to always be critical for Dallas. It's just Dallas, they're Dallas. So every year they got to make sure they do it the right way, because mm-hmm. It seems like no matter what, Dallas ends up faltering at the end of the season.
And
somewhere.
They always kill it in the draft.
Exactly. It's like, but it never materialized into championships
right.
With them. So Titans, Giants, Cowboys,
I'll throw out another
who
one.
Else? Who?
The Patriots.
Yeah, Patriots.
They have a barren roster.
Yeah, and they have to now, this team, I look at this team, and they got to remove themselves from the Bill Belichick era and the Tom Brady era. They have to separate themselves from that era because – and when I mean separate, I mean they got to start winning in their own way. Mm-hmm. We know why New England won all those years. Tom Brady. You don't have Tom Brady now. You got to separate yourself from those teams, because if you don't, you're going to always be compared to them. So separation means you need to build this roster up and start winning so that they're not constantly comparing you. Because if they're constantly comparing you to those teams, that means your coach is not doing a good enough job at winning games. Mm-hmm. And it's gonna be this revolving door. If you solidify your roster, get the quarterback, then you will start to remove yourself from the old Patriots dynasty. But right now, you're still in that all of it's still mixed together.
And unfortunately for Gerard Mayo, unfortunately for the young rookie quarterback that they may or may not draft in this upcoming draft, they will constantly be compared to that Patriots dynasty until they start winning on their own. And with this Patriots team right now, I don't see them winning very many games.
Mm-hmm. I don't see them winning many games. And then Chicago, I think Chicago has to get this right.
Yeah.
Now, I know that we know they're drafting Caleb Williams, but they still have to get this draft right because they've messed up the last couple. You look at the quarterback. They messed him up so much so they had to come back and draft another quarterback, three years later. So it wasn't a home run hit with the last quarterback. You need to get this one right because if you don't, you're going to find yourself in a carousel of just constantly drafting quarterbacks. Every two or three years, you're drafting a new quarterback. So y'all need to get this right this time with this coaching staff and this GM for the Chicago Bears.
When you got top 10 picks in the first round, and you've got a quarterback as highly coveted and as highly touted as Caleb Williams, cannot afford to screw that one up.
No, you need to pull a Houston Texan. That's what you need to pull in this draft.
Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet will join us coming up next. We'll talk Preds and Canucks in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. So go online to leecompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's leecompany.com/giveaway in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Contest entry are accepted until Saturday, April 20th. Lee Company, all you need.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.